Working hard to make a left, rich and farm red. Father's son left a cameo, blue denim had his vein. He's a rocking class man.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. I'll tell you, you know, this November, so much riding on this November. The direction of this country, and I know we say it every election cycle, that this is the one. This is the most important in history, and I got to be honest, this is the most important election, at least as far as I'm concerned, in the history of this country, at least in the history of the state of Pennsylvania. But across the country, we're seeing people who are throwing their hats into the ring, standing up, stepping forward, saying, you know what? I am going to run. I am going to be the one to put myself in that fishbowl and take on an incumbent, to take on an issue, to fight for a better future for not just ourselves, but for our children. I look to New York, the 11th Congressional District there. There's a guy named Dan Donovan, who's the incumbent Republican right now. And if you may remember, he took over for the guy, he won a special election for the guy who got himself into a whole bunch of insanity, you know, threatening to beat people up in the halls and just all kinds of craziness. Not been the greatest guy. Somebody I think would be great to see that seat flipped, which is why I've asked Omar Vaid to come talk with us. He's a union member, also a candidate for New York's 11th Congressional District. Omar, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thank you so much for having me on. Thank you, listeners. Thank you.
So I got the first question I got to ask is, one, why would you want to do this to yourself? And two, what's the mission? What's the plan? Why are you doing it?
Okay, so I think everyone listening, I think anyone that knows your show, I think we know this is a really special moment in time. And you're right. You're absolutely right. This is our chance. This is the most important election in Pennsylvania, in New York, all over the country. It's a special moment where it's not even just about opposing someone or whatever. This is a real opportunity. And I, you know, like as a fraternal, you know, union brother and sisters listening and people interested in workers and working rights, of course, we have Janice versus AFSCME that's up soon, you know, threats to unions as we know them. Even their existence. And we saw the Constitutional Convention in New York. New York is one of the strongest union states. And we even saw here in New York threats coming from our state, you know, from our actual state. And this is a moment where anyone listening, Staten Island and South Brooklyn, there's more union members in this district than anywhere else in New York City. And it's exciting. When you go through, I've sent endorsement letters to over 400 unions, and it's what's most exciting. Of course, you're a big labor historian, is to see the local one, the local three, you know, the early numbers pop up, and this is where it started for us. It's where we go back the longest. Like the brothers and sisters in my trade. They talk about the third and fourth generation, and we think about our values, and they're worth defending, and they're worth fighting to save for the future. So this is an opportunity that I saw where Staten Island and Brooklyn and myself, we can be from this seat is underutilized, and we can be leaders in strengthening unions and protecting them and unionizing job sites. And we can show off our history a little bit.
Yeah, really this year more than ever, because I think anybody who has been following the Janice versus AFSCME case, they're pretty confident that it's going to go the wrong way, that Neil Gorsuch will be the fifth vote that everyone thought Scalia was going to be in the Friedrichs case. And this assault on public sector workers and this imposing of a national right to work law is going to happen. So having someone in the in the halls of power who are going to be able to help mitigate some of the damage, to help workers maintain some rights, and maybe even pass laws to help protect workers, I think is vitally important right now.
That's absolutely the case. And that for me, this is like, it's a special moment where, like here in this district, it's exciting. Like I was in a Labor for Our Revolution meeting, and to have all like the members and the people who were there and the energy, it's just exciting that here, yeah, in this place, I think it's a special spot. And also, of course, in Pennsylvania, in New Jersey, in a lot of the blue states, of course, too, it's something in our history. And so we think of values and protection and things like that. And that's what I intend to do. I intend to be someone you can even reach. I'm famous for that. You can actually reach me directly, you know, very easily through Twitter or through phones or offices. And I'll come and help you. I'll come help you unionize a job site. You know, I'll come and actually help and use social media or show up, and we'll do it together with the union bosses that will on a local level, and then on a national level we'll strengthen all these laws and we'll write new ones. As you know, there's things of course right now that we're resisting, but let's talk about going further, you know, and looking into our history for inspiration.
No, I mean, one of the things that I talk about quite often, Omar, is, you know, how do we rebuild that prosperous working class that our grandparents fought for? That my grandparents, you know, came back from World War II and went to the shop floor and said, you know what, we're not taking this you know what anymore, and we're going to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, a better future for ourselves and our children and grandchildren. And what's happened over the last 40 years is all of those gains that generation fought for have been clawed back by a wealth class that has honestly and truthfully been extremely committed to labor's demise, to destroying workers' rights, to destroying that prosperous working class. And I've been saying for a long time, it's got to take people like you. It's got to take people who are going to stand up and say, you know what, enough, vote for me. I'm going to Washington. I'm going to Albany or Harrisburg or Columbus, and we're going to take this thing in the right direction.
I totally agree. Like, I file my taxes as a mechanic, and, you know, I did this, you know, exactly for these reasons. And I thought, I didn't even own a suit. So when I went in to buy one, the first thing I asked was, do you have a suit made in America? And they said, no one's ever asked that, but we believe there is one. There's one, you know, and I said, well, I don't have to try it on. That'll be the one I buy. I hope it fits. But it was union tailored. And, you know, that tailor in Massachusetts really appreciates having that job. And it starts with awareness that can you even find the labeling if something's made in America? Is it even there? And there's, you know, to pass legislation for proof and labeling and making it easier. And there should be a little Chinese flag on a Chinese product. You should know what you're walking out with. And there should be an American flag. You know, it should be easy to see.
Yep.
And,
it, no, I
agree. That's easy. This is just like we have food. Our food is labeled, you know, so correctly that why aren't our products? And also, like, you know, to me, I'm really passionate about protectionism, that these trade deals, you know, there's always going to be players who dump steel or dump solar panels, and there'll be someone who always violates trade deals. But we can protect. We did it in the auto trade,
right,
where we chose to protect that trade. And Toyota and Mercedes came here to build factories. We can protect our own and our trades. And I talk about protectionism and never isolationism and never privatization. And you're right. And never giving – they make it sound like the companies – can't compete globally, so we should give them everything. And it's like, no, it's the American worker is the most efficient and hardworking in the world if just given the opportunity to do the work.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, you know, I'm right there with you. I talk about protectionism and isolationism, much as you framed. And I say, look, you know, when I leave my house, I lock the door. I don't have a giant moat around my house. But I do lock the door. And, you know, we should be having those conversations about, you know, how do we protect American workers? Because if you went back to 2016, you know, Donald Trump ran on just what you were saying. We're gonna promote American products. We're gonna save American steel. We're going to fight for American jobs and American workers. And yet here we are over a year into this nightmare. And none of those things have come to fruition or even, in my view, been attempted.
Well, I mean, I have, you know, so many friends, you know, who voted for our president, and, you know, brothers and sisters in my trade, and it is that he gave everyone hope. And that's the most crushing thing of all, is that, you know, the tax plan actually encourages outsourcing. To me, that was, I mean, it was, my friends are, you know, with the property taxes and things we're getting hit by, but to see that in this thing about, you know, repatriating money, well, it encourages you to open a factory overseas because you pay a lower you only pay 10% in taxes instead of paying your domestic taxes here. It actually encouraged outsourcing. Like, it just was, to me, it was mind-blowing, you know, to see what his intentions were. And so, or how they wrote the legislation. I mean, it's just, it was so sad.
Well, I mean, the legislation was not for people like you or I, Omar. It wasn't for us. It was for the millionaires and billionaires. And I wouldn't even say the millionaires anymore. We've whittled this thing down to just the handful over the rest of us.
Yeah, you're spot on, Rick.
So let me ask you the other side of this, because there are a lot of issues outside of union politics and you know, workers' rights to organize. There's, you know, there's health care, there's infrastructure, there's all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, are you seeing us moving in the right direction when you look at the health care discussion? I mean, I wasn't a huge Obamacare fan. I thought it was a step in the right direction. I've always been a Medicare for all guy. It just seems that having in the private sector, you know, stealing money out of our pockets, not a helpful thing. Where do you find yourself on the healthcare issue?
I agree with you. I'm with you. And I've had this conversation with Teamsters, with the union trades. Like, I got my start in the union from Teamsters Local 817 that members, you know, told me about. You know, my father was union. And they, you know, they brought me in and it was about healthcare. They said, someday, kid, you're going to care about your healthcare. You're only 24, but you're going to care. And that was, you know, 12 years ago. And, you know, the thing was like sitting with families who, I mean, if you know, unions get us very good and very generous healthcare. But when you talk to, go talk to your union president and ask every 3 years or every, however often there's a contract, ask why we don't get a wage increase. Ask why we don't get a pension fund increase. Ask why we give something up every year, and they'll tell you it's healthcare. It's the healthcare costs are out of control, and our leadership—they try so hard to fight for us to have low deductibles or zero deductibles, and they fight so hard for us to have the same healthcare we've always had or to keep it really good, and that's the problem. The costs are so high. Ask your union leadership that if our employers paid 5% and we just paid 1%, we would save. I mean, we don't see the bill, but there's a 10 to 15% cost on your salary that would be going to our wage increases, would be going to our pension fund, that we can have the savings. We can have that 6%. Ask your union leadership. I mean, that's where it goes. It goes to healthcare.
Yeah. Do you think on the whole healthcare debate that, you know, we weren't as a society ready to have that discussion, that people didn't really know how much healthcare was costing them because a lot of employers, it was part of the wage package. Because over the years, look, I mean, unions have done such a great job of making people's lives better, better wages, hours, mm-hmm. conditions, all of that. And, you know, mm-hmm. I was a Teamster for more than 20 years. We always had Cadillac healthcare. It was
yeah,
the best.
Exactly.
You walk in,
the
you had a card,
healthcare.
Whatever you needed was taken care of.
The best healthcare, yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And not just for the members, but also for non-union workers in the same kind of industry, their benefits were better too because of the union benefits. And as the union density has dwindled, what's happened is these employers have gone, hey, here's an opportunity to shift all of these healthcare costs onto mm-hmm. the backs of these working people. And
exactly. We've
been kind of taken by it and shocked by it. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, no, you know, you're exactly right. And that's the thing is that when you don't see the bill, we forget that our employer is paying for it. And we take it. It's not that we take it for granted. We just don't see the bill. And, of course, anyone who gets paid on a W-2, we see the lines. We see. And you know, I might have a D next to my name, but I don't want I want a reduction if you're getting a W-2 of every line. You know, I think, like, it's already we pay too much. I'm not for putting anything more, but it's true. We don't see the bill. And yeah, it could be, I mean, if you're a Teamster or, you know, in my local, it could be, $14,000 a year or $10,000 a year or $18,000 a year for your family that is being paid by your employer. It only needs to be about $5,000 or $6,000 for Medicare. So the savings in between, there's $10,000 a year there And yeah, talk to your union leadership. We could take that in future contracts. We could have that for pension fund and wages.
Yeah,
it's
and
right
it
there.
Would be a boom to the economy because you'd have workers with more disposable income. But you said something that caught my attention. You know, about the tax issue, because I hear people say all the time, "Oh, we're taxed enough already. You know, come on, Omar, we can pay too much tax."
If you get paid on a W-2, that's true. You are taxed up because they take it from you up front. They withhold all your money. And you're absolutely right. The people at the very top, they don't get withheld, you know, and they call them the Panama Papers and the private offices that do your taxes for you.
Yeah.
And they have these strategies to get out of things, and they can write things off creatively. But yeah, it's like we keep saying they need to pay their fair share. I mean, it's just that people who get paid on a W-2, it's just not fair. We're overtaxed, and then we get hit, of course, with our property taxes and our state taxes. And you know, I this is who I am. I mean, this is who I represent.
Isn't it amazing after like 25 years of the Grover Norquist no tax pledge, that taxes on working people keep going up? I mean, we call it different things. You know, obviously, you know, we've got fees for driver's licenses and fees for dog licenses, mm-hmm. fees for this, fees for that. You got Trump today saying he wants to raise the gas tax a quarter a gallon. That's a tax. You go, all of this stuff just seems to hit working people the hardest.
Yeah.
And those gamblers in Wall Street, they seem to walk away unscathed.
Yeah, I mean, my best friend, he voted for the president really with the intention, hoping to get tax relief. And his taxes in Long Island are over $20,000 a year. And he, you know, the home has been in the family for a generation, you know, and it was the ultimate betrayal to find out he can't write off his SALT deductions. I mean, he's in danger of losing his home. And there's many people listening who understand that. It's, you know, it's the saddest thing in the world, you know, that none of this is necessary. I mean, it's not fair.
We can change it. And how we change it is by putting people like you into office. So let me ask you, you know, as you've been running through this, how do people help you? What's the ask? What's the 2-minute elevator talk?
Oh, to help us? Well, you know, it's called joining hashtag Team Omar. There's a lot of ways. I would be honored to have your help wherever you are in the country. If you're in Brooklyn and Staten Island or in the city, you can help locally. Otherwise, you can help many ways. There's omarvaid.com, OmarVaid. And we're funded by only – I mean, like, we only take donations from people, from individuals. So we're funded by, you know, people donating $5 or $20. You know, that's who we are. We don't take corporate money or anything like that.
Well, I mean, at some point, it's got to be we the people who take back our government. I hope people will check out your website. Folks in your area will help out. I wish you the best. And as this continues down the road, I'd love to have you come back and share some more stories and some thoughts with us.
Thank you so much, Rick. And thank you, listeners.
Good stuff, Omar. I appreciate it. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. And I'll go to work at night. I got no time for living, yes, I'm working all the time. It seems to me I could live my life a lot better than I think I am. I guess that's why they call me the working man. Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.